As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to the Saturday Slammin' Jam, hosted by Andrew Schlecht with Alex Spears.
How about we can just watch basketball?
That's a man's jam!
I like that idea.
Live from Oklahoma.
We click.
With questions and participants from all around the world.
Anthony Edwards!
Put that on a poster!
Whether you're flipping your flapjacks, tending to your yard, or just sipping your coffee, get ready, sit back, relax. It's the Saturday Slammin' Jam.
Fact is, I missed this shot. I'll walk away. I'm still a chump.
Here's Andrew.
Welcome to the Saturday Slammin' Jam. I'm your host, Andrew Schlecht. Go to theathletic.com/NBA show and get The Athletic for $1 a month for 6 months. You're going to get all the draft analysis. We got free agency just around the corner. This is the time. You can also listen to this podcast ad-free if you have a subscription to The Athletic. You can also go and read Sam Vecenie, who just has the best words. And also, you can listen to his podcast that our guest, Matt Penny, who I'm going to introduce here in a minute. You can listen to their podcast ad-free, too, on The Athletic. So with me, as always, is my good friend Alex Spears. Alex, what's up?
What's up, Andrew?
And with us, it's just going to be a tradition, hopefully forever, where we have Matt Penny on the day after the draft. Matt, what's up, man?
How are we doing? Thanks for having me, guys. I'm doing great. I'm happy to be here with you. We commiserated here a little bit. I feel like collectively, last night was a really fun night. It was like a friend's wedding, and yeah. We woke up the next morning. We're still like buzzy a little bit, but we're like in the hotel lobby. Should we walk to breakfast? But I'm like leaning over to Alex being like, if we walk to breakfast, I might die. Like on the walk over. And he's like, come on, man, suck it up. We have one podcast left. Do it.
Yeah.
That's where I'm at. We're dads. We've collectively slept, I think, 6 hours between the three of us on the podcast.
That seems about right. I think that's about right. Alex may be bringing us to that six with like sleeping nothing, I think. So, Alex, we're going to do draft awards. This is how off I am. I'm talking about trades. NBA draft awards today. So it's way too early to know anything about how this will turn out, but that's why we're doing it. So you can come listen to this a year from now and just know how dumb we are. But this is what's fun about the draft, is that there's so much mystery, there's so much intrigue, and we're going to go ahead and hand out awards to these teams for who they selected last night.
Yes, this is the NBA Draft Awards, our second annual, and Matt Penny, of course, was our guest last year, which means, Matt, that you now have a lifetime commitment to join us every single year. How does that feel?
It feels heavy, but heavy is the... the head that wears the crown, and I'm happy to be here with two kings of podcasting and NBA draft space. So let's party together here. Let's get last party in here for as the draft is. I think ends. I think it's over. But
before we all pass out. Okay, first award, the first round fit award. This award goes to our favorite player team combo that we saw in the first round. And Matt, I'm going to start with you. Lead us off. What was your favorite fit?
Thank you. Thank you for the start. My favorite fit is Jaden Ivey to the Detroit Pistons. Ooh. I was actually sad on lottery night. I was. When the ping pong balls, the combinations ended up with Detroit out of that top three, even the top four, I wanted some help with Cade Cunningham. I thought it'd be somebody up in the front court. Those three guys. I had Jaden Ivey fourth on my board. So I didn't think this was going to happen. I immediately sold myself on Keegan Murray, which isn't too much of a sell because I'm a huge Keegan Murray fan. But he just isn't that next-level, game-changing style of play disruptor that the Pistons needed. And they have Jaden Ivey kind of fall into their laps here a little bit. And I love the contrast in styles he has with Cade Cunningham. The Pistons were already a tough out last year to end the season. And now you have Cade Cunningham as your main creator. You have Jaden Ivey's blinding speed, the Baja burst, as he calls it, out on the wing. They can take times as primary initiators, facilitators. They need to get more athletic. As much as I like Sadiq Bey, he turned himself more into like this mid-post score shooter. It gives them a different wrinkle, a different element in the way that they can get up and down. And then the half-court attack with Cade taking a few plays off, not have to have the ball every single possession. And I like that they're going to be able to play the right way with a young wing. And you also had a rim runner in Jalen Duren. So the whole package makes sense. That's why Jaden Ivey is my number one huge win for the Detroit Pistons to start the night.
You mentioned that Ivy calls his first set the Baja Blast. How is he not the guy who got the Taco Bell endorsement?
I know.
Why was it Johnny Davis? That would have been what a perfect fit that would have been.
I may or may not know the answer to that one. look up management and where they attended school, their university. That might be an answer for you. Jaden would be a natural fit, but I can never slander Johnny Davis, who's one of my favorites in the process, too.
That's right.
All right, Andrew, what is your first round fit award?
I really like Christian Brown, 21 to the Nuggets. No, I'm not going to do that to you.
How deep are you getting here? Draft people like, not just the Athletic. What podcast is this?
I'm going full homer. Chet Holmgren to the Thunder. I think the fit is going to be seamless. They want to play fast. They want to play five out. They want to play skill all over the court. And the toughest position to have skill at is the center position. The guys that can do the things that Chet does from the five are just so rare. And he's the type of player the Thunder have wanted to fill that spot. I mean, if you look on the roster, Derek Favors is only on the roster because he got them a first round pick. He's not really on the roster. Everybody else is extremely versatile. Like Jeremiah Robinson Earl plays the four and the five. Darius Baisley is like a versatile big. And Chet is going to be the center of the future for the Thunder. He can finish at the rim at a very high rate. I think he finished close to 80% at the rim this year. He's going to block shots. He can push in transition. He was one of the better transition players in college basketball. And that's how Mark coaches. Mark is up off the bench every single game, yelling at them to run, yelling at them what action that they're going to run once they get across half court. But he's like, run, go. He wants them to go. And he's not going to he's not going to have to motivate Chet to do that. Like, that's just within Chet. And the dude loves basketball. I heard a story that he will just be up in the middle of the night watching tape of like old all-star players like Kobe and MJ. Like, he just loves it. So, like, while DeAndre Ayton's up till 4 in the morning playing Fortnite, you've got Chet, who is just up watching, you know, the legends of the game because he just can't get enough. So to me, it's Chet to OKC.
That warms my heart too, because I had Chet number one on my board, and we talk about how he watches old film of veterans, and at Under Armour we had him at Steph Curry camp a few years ago. He kind of had this clip go viral where it was like a crossover behind the back. Steph Curry's on him, takes another dribble and dunks. That's like kind of taking the film, taking the processing, taking the teachings, and be able to implement that so quickly. And that's like an actual skill for him too. The stuff he does at 7 feet tall shouldn't be possible. I'm excited for you guys. I am. I think it's a great fit.
Yeah. Give us some more Chet nuggets, because you've been around him for years and you know his game. Like, what did his progression look like to get to the level where he's a top two pick in the draft?
Absolutely wild. I mean, he played 16U and walked in the gym, and the first time I saw him, I think he was 15, and I was like, this is not a basketball player. Just like an absolute skin and bones kid who was like 6'9", 6'10". He ran up and down the court, and I was worried about, like, is a foul going to knock this kid over, and I'm going to have to have the trainer sit on this court the whole game for every time he falls. But as soon as you watched him, you knew, like, this is a tough kid. Like, he doesn't look like he's like this intimidating person or force, but he certainly is. He just got a lot better. He worked on his ball skills. He's always been able to shoot. His dad played at Minnesota, so he grew up with like the basketball bloodlines and stuff. We had him at a smaller camp at IMG Academy for like rising juniors in high school a few years ago. And being in that smaller setting, you could coach him up a little bit, get on him, dog him. And he just took to it. He was like, all right, next play, I got you. I'm going to do this, that, and starts chirping a little bit. So he's the complete package. We've talked to death about can the body withstand it. He has the mental toughness and fitness. He's told us, I do lift weights. I do eat food. I am committed to this thing. I have snacks. I don't just like starve myself. I'm not watching these clips at 4 a.m. being like, how long can I not eat? Right. So you have to rely on strength conditioning program there. But I'm a huge believer. I think Chet's the reason why the draft is invented for swings like this at number one. And you got him at number two, which is even better.
Yeah.
All right. For my pick for first round fit award, I went with Dyson Daniels and the New Orleans Pelicans. When we had Sam Vecenie on the pod last week, I asked him if the Lonzo Ball comp for Dyson Daniels is fair. This idea of the big defensive-minded guard act as a connector on offense. And now a week later, Daniels is on the team that Lonzo left just a couple seasons ago. Now, who knows if Dyson becomes the shooter that Lonzo became, but they do have Fred Vinson, who is the shot whisperer, and all of his other qualities, backcourt size, secondary ball handler, perimeter defense, fit in perfectly with what New Orleans already has. During the pre-draft process, I was super skeptical whether Daniels was getting, like, why he was getting top five buzz, because I just saw him more as like an elite role player, and I didn't know if I was a bad team. I didn't know if I'd really want to be drafting a player like that super high. But for a playoff team like the Pelicans, who already have so many pieces in place, I feel like taking someone like Daniels is the perfect fit for what they need.
It's such a good swing, because this has been talked about and discussed at length, but you don't know what the Pelicans, when they're going to get back in this range again to draft. This was because of the Anthony Davis trade, and you can take a younger guy who's 18, 19 years old, develop him, and this is kind of like there maybe a little bit of domestic draft and stash. I read an article this morning. It escapes me what publication it was, as our brains are all mush. But it said that Trajan Langdon, they had honed in on Dyson Daniels. He was the guy. So when Shaedon Sharpe went the pick before, their draft room exploded because he was going to be there at 8. There had been some talks about Usman Jang being there, and that was like some smoke. But according to Trajan Langdon, it was Dyson Daniels all the way. I like the fit. Defensively, he gets there right away. Not going to be called on to be this offensive guy either. It needs a little bit of development and fits their culture. So I like that pick too.
Yeah, you wonder now with that Usman Jang smokescreen, if that was a plan, like if Daniels had gone at 7 to encourage OKC to move up to 8, now that we know what OKC was willing to pay just to move up or to get a 11 pick.
Right.
Okay, before we move on to the next award, we do have a bonus award. Now, this award is only for Matt Penny to answer. It is a yes or no award, first of its kind. Are you happy with where Johnny Davis has landed, Matt Penny?
Can I say sort of, or is that a take? Because we were just talking about the Pelicans. I was rooting for, I guess, a soft no, and here's why. I was rooting for the Pelicans because could he do the Herb Jones, come in, and you don't have to be this immediate contributor without crazy expectations. Playing at Washington with Brad Beal, question mark in parentheses, as ball dominant as he is, I don't know how that like meshes and works well together. But I lobbied hard that I wanted him on a team that takes that offensive load off him. That's why his usage rate was so high. And that's why people were poking holes in the shot percentages and the shots he had to take at Wisconsin. This certainly does that to an extent. So I'd give it like a B overall for a grade. Soft no. I'm not saying yes. I'm not saying no. Could have been better. But hey, he's still a top 10 pick. Can't be too upset.
Okay, our second award is the second round steal award. Now, this award goes to our favorite player team combo fit in the second round. And Andrew, we're going to start with you.
Okay. I'm going to go Gabriele Brochita.
I like that.
To the Detroit Pistons. I really like this selection for them. He is going to be kind of a play finisher for them. He can really shoot it. He's 6'7", young, 20 years old. And I think he really fits what Detroit wants to do. They've got their ball handlers. They need somebody that can shoot it on the wing. And to me, he's a guy that you can bring along probably pretty slowly. But if it works out, you got like a really, really good player. And I don't think that he's going to be a bad defender. I think people see his name and probably instantly say, all right, probably can shoot, probably horrible defender. I don't think that really fits his profile. So I think that that's a steal for them in the second round. I also have bias because my buddy Michele Barra is Italian and has some connections to him. And, you know,
inside.
I knew it had to be something.
Yeah.
Get my guy on there. I like him too. Bouncy. Yeah. I had him 40th, so kind of in that range. I liked him. That was the pick in the right range for sure.
Okay, I went with Christian Coloco with the Toronto Raptors. Now, he's probably not a steal because this is kind of the range where most saw him going, but I just really like the fit in Toronto. They had been rumored to be in the center market for what felt like years now, and it's not like getting Christian Coloco takes you out of that market necessarily, but I just thought it was a nice pick given their roster and where they were in the draft. Now, if you don't know Coloco, if you're out there listening, 7'1 center, athletic, mobile, from Arizona. For the Raptors, he gives them a legit rim protector that just adds to the versatility of their lineups, being able to go bigger with him at center for certain matchups. Now, he is older. He turned 22 only a few days ago, but despite his age, he's actually relatively new to basketball, only playing since the age of 15. So there might be more development there than you might assume for your average 22-year-old. And given that Toronto has been incredible at developing talent, it seems like a good bet. And then, just as a bonus, Christian Coloco is from the same hometown in Cameroon as Pascal Siakam. How's that? That's pretty cool.
Look at these threads we're unraveling here.
So, it's not a sexy pick, but it's a pick where I think the player landed in the perfect environment to maximize their outcome, whatever it's going to be.
Toronto is one of those teams just like, we're going to do stuff our way. We don't really care consensus. We don't care if you think he's old, he's young. We'll fix it, whatever's broken. Great rim protector. Offense is going to take a while to get there. It did get better over time at Arizona. Had some huge games where he was like 12 of 12 from the field, just on dunks out of the dunker spot and running full court. I had him 30th, so right there too. That was a good pick.
And Matt, what is your second round steal award? Who gets it?
So I'm usually people ask I work for the Spurs. You might start asking I work for the Pelicans. I'm going to go with EJ Liddell.
Oh, I love EJ Liddell. Yes.
Oh, I had EJ Liddell significantly higher. I had him 21st on my board. He goes to a team now that turned the tide post the CJ McCollum trade. Gives you a different look next to Jonas Valanciunas or Zion Williamson. He improved as a player just all around between season at Ohio State. He's more mobile than he was a year ago. Sneaky good shot blocker at 2.6 per game, doesn't get talked about because he is undersized. He's 6'7" in shoes. He makes up with that with a nearly 7-foot wingspan. Shot 37% from three this last college season. The Pelicans invested in length. They invested in character. EJ was worthy of a first-round pick. I strongly believe that. And an absolute steal at 41st. And I expect him to crack the rotation as a rookie in some way.
Yeah, I saw the report. I mean, of course, everyone's going to say this, but they said they had a first-round grade on him. Yeah. And so him falling to that point was like a huge deal. Okay, our next award is the League Pass Jump Award. This award goes to the team who most improved their watchability next season. Now, I'm going to start us off. And I'm going with the Houston Rockets.
Ooh.
Now,
okay.
I like that.
Houston, honestly, was one of my personal toughest watches last year. Now, it definitely got better.
They went
better
from a zero to a one.
It got better in the second half. You know, Jalen Green started exploding. But for most of that season, I did not enjoy my time with the Rockets. And to be fair, Christian Wood, pretty significant factor in that. Because it seemed like depending on the night, he might just decide not to play any defense. And meanwhile, he's taking minutes from their rookie, Alperen Şengün, a rookie who they had just given up 2 firsts to acquire. Yeah. Now I feel like they're cooking. Because, listen, I know Rockets fans had fallen in love with Paolo, but I love that they got two great defenders in Jabari Smith Jr. and Tari Eason to bolster a roster with some serious defensive questions. And I think the space that you get with Jabari shooting is going to help Şengün so much on offense. I love Ty as a value pick late in the first. There's just a lot more going on here that makes sense compared to last season. We're going to get to watch way more youth-focused lineups, but also lineups that will probably make more sense functionally than they did last year. So I think it's a big league pass win for the Rockets.
Yeah, I definitely buy that with Jabari. I think Jabari fits a little bit better. If you're just, and the problem is, like, you don't really need fit right now. You just need the best talent. So I think you can be a little bit disappointed if you're a Rockets fan, just because I do like the fit, like, within the offense with Paolo there. But Jabari makes everything make sense a little bit faster for them, I think, just because he can defend and he can space. I don't know that it has the highest ceiling. I don't think it was the highest ceiling outcome for them, but he does allow things to fall into place a little bit faster.
Yeah, Jabari's shooting just stretches it out for so many guys, and that helps defensively with Alperen Şengün. It helps Tari Eason because he's not the best shooter right now. He's great in transition, can create off the elbows a little bit, but that shot's like a catapult off the right shoulder. If Jabari Smith, if all he does next year is catch and shoot, that's enough to help all the other pieces on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Matt, what is your league pass jump award? Who are you giving it to?
So I actually have a back-to-back champion. This is who I also crowned last year, and then it fell short. So we missed the middle when we kind of found the abyss here. I'm going with the Charlotte Hornets. And a year ago, this is my sell because of James Bouknight, Kai Jones, JT Thor, Scotty Lewis. Those guys didn't pan all the way out, but I thought we could run. We could play really fast. And if you remember, some of those preseason games, the first time I turned it on this year, the first second I turned it on, LaMelo Ball took it off the rim and like threw it to like the third row, like down the other end. Like, this is something I want to watch. I don't know why. So now you enter Mark Williams from Duke. 9'9" standing reach, 6'11", 7 feet tall, 7'5" wingspan, crazy. Just a nasty shot blocker, a transition runner, a dunker spot extraordinaire next to LaMelo Ball. That's a fun two-man game. And also like a sort of underrated NBA Jam duo, if that game ever came back. Like, give me LaMelo and Mark Williams to start, and we'll go from there. They can take Sean Kemp and Gary Payton. And I would be remiss also to not add one of my sleepers from the cycle, Josh Minot of Memphis, also now on this Charlotte team. So
there you go.
I have to watch more as it is. I have to see this thing pan all the way out. I would invest in League Pass to watch that show. You can take my money now. I'll Venmo you, and we can get this going.
I would feel so much better if Kenny Atkinson was there. Like, if I knew there was a developmental coach who was going to play all these young guys. Like, the recent reports about them thinking about Steve Clifford coming back. I mean, he's going to play Mark Williams, but some of these other guys, like Kai Jones and James Bouknight, like, are we going to ever see them?
I don't know.
Like, legitimately worried about it.
That's why they're back-to-back champs, because, like, I'm not even really factoring those guys in. It's not a shot. Yeah. I'm not dismissing them. But let's do Mark Williams, Josh Minot, LaMelo Ball, and roll the ball out.
All right, Andrew, who are you giving your League Pass Jump Award to?
Detroit basketball. Man, I love what they did. I think they actually – so they were actually okay to watch last year.
Yeah.
They just had guys that were in that spot that you're just like, man, this is an awful lot of Frank Jackson. You know, and if you replace the Frank Jackson minutes with Jaden Ivey, it's like, okay, now I can see it. Not that Frank Jackson needs to be like sent to Siberia. Like, he just needs to play 15 minutes off the bench because that's the kind of player that he is. And that's okay. I love that. I love the fit of Jalen Duren with those guys. I think that makes a ton of sense for them. I don't know that they can play him and Isaiah Stewart together. Isaiah Stewart took a ton of threes toward the end of the season, so maybe that's a thing. I don't know. But I love the upside swing of taking Jalen Duren with those guys. The catch radius for him is outrageous, and those guys are going to find him, and he's going to have a ton of dunks next year. I think that's going to be really fun. And just I think you coined this, or you said this on the Game Theory last night. It's the fire and ice, right?
Oh, yeah. Fire and ice, baby.
With Cade Cunningham and Jaden Ivey.
You had three shows going on, and somehow I still listen to Game Theory. This is why you're tired. You're like, I was on the phone. I'm listening to bad podcasts.
Loyal listener.
I think one of the cool things about Detroit, too, is DeAndre Ayton has kind of been like rumored as like a landing spot. And Jalen Duren is like the poor man's-ish version of that, and not a slight at either one of those guys. But if you don't take Ayton, you made some trades, some moves, so now you have Ivy, you have Dern, and now you have like $40-ish million in cap space to go out in free agency and maybe get another shooter, space everything out for everyone. So really good night for Troy Reeve from the Pistons. So I totally agree with that.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Okay, our next award is the Why Are We Letting Them Do This Award? This award goes to the prospect drafted by a contending team that we think will have the biggest long-term impact. Matt, who do you got for this one?
Well, I'm trying to vary my answers for this show here. EJ Liddell would be my answer, but I'm going to take a different direction here. I'm going to go with the Golden State Warriors collectively for a couple of their picks, and here's why.
Okay.
I had Pat Baldwin 41st on my board. However, if there's a fit that works, it's with Golden State. It's with him as Klay Thompson's understudy, putting his arm around him, saying, this is how we're going to do it. This is how you shoot and move. This is how you hedge some defensive stuff, get his confidence back, doesn't have to play right away. And then in the second round, they drafted, well, it was through a trade, but they acquired Ryan Rollins from Toledo, who I really, really like as combo guard. I had him 24th on my board. I love his mid-range scoring. Now come and learn from one of the best shooters who's kind of in that mold ever in Steph Curry. It's sort of like Golden State hired two like unbelievable intern understudies to learn the ropes from their existing pieces. It's this crazy sort of like NBA version of Westworld in a sense. So that's why I think they got a lot better in like hiring guys that are could be something. If they don't pan out, that's okay. They still have Jonathan Kuminga, Moses Moody, James Wiseman on the bench. So they win a championship, somehow get better and younger with players that had fallen out a little bit of the first round, and still two wins for picks for me.
Yeah, I also went with Patrick Baldwin Jr. going to Golden State. Just because, like, as bad as his college season was, as bad as, like, the combine testing was, there was a reason why he was ranked so highly coming into the year. And if that idea is ever going to be realized, wouldn't it happen in a place like Golden State, as you mentioned, like with Klay there and everyone else? And I actually like the idea long-term of pairing him with an athlete like Jonathan Kuminga. Obviously, this is like so far in the future. We have no idea when we're going to see Patrick Baldwin Jr.
The year is 2032.
Yeah, exactly. But I just
They're
think it's a great
cars
bet for them
in the backcourt is Kuminga and Baldwin.
All right, Andrew, do you have a different selection for why are we letting them do this?
I do. The Dallas Mavericks were in the Western Conference Finals this year. They're starting to change their roster a little bit. Just the fact that the Kings just handed over Jaden Hardy to them, I think it's a really great place for him. I would have really, really worried if it was the Kings that got him. But you go into this environment, they've developed small guards year after year after year. And to me, this is a great place for him to learn the NBA. And if it works out with him, he's got Luka next to him, I think that's perfect because he doesn't have to shoulder the load. He doesn't have to be the man. If he can come in off the bench, like he could score 20 points off the bench on any given night if he reaches his potential. So getting that guy at 37, I think, is great value for the Mavericks.
Yeah, he slides a little bit, and he fits that Cam Thomas in Brooklyn type of role, type of mold. Season at the Ignite got better. It did. As the year went on, has to work on efficiency of some of his shots, has real range, has real scoring prowess. I like him there in Dallas to take a flyer on and a good flyer.
All right, our next award is the They Definitely Have a Type Award. This award goes to the team who most lived up to their reputation with their draft selections. Andrew, who do you have for the They Definitely Have a Type Award?
So the NBA collective is now catching up to this type with the Oklahoma City Thunder. Mm. But the Thunder picked a type in this draft, and it is super skilled. You have size for your position. You can play multiple positions, and you may not be the best athlete in the entire world. And this is the new type.
Get
everybody's
him.
Like,
trade
whoa.
Him. Do it. Get him. Yep.
Yeah. It's everybody's like, oh, explosive, can't shoot, doesn't do anything but be a good athlete is the Thunder type. Well, not anymore. I mean, they drafted Chet Holmgren number 2. They traded 3 first-round picks for Usman Jang at 11, who is super skilled, 6'10", interesting project for them, certainly, but fits that mold. And then Jalen Williams out of Santa Clara at 12, he's just like this do-it-all, 6'6", crazy wingspan. Is it 7'1", 7'2"?
Yeah, it's right around there, 6'11" plus, yeah.
Yeah, can defend multiple positions. You can play him with Josh and Shea. Some people think you can even slide him down to the 4 in certain lineups. Like, he's going to be extremely versatile and will play from day one because he's a little bit older. This is their type. And even if you go to the other Jalen Williams, their other type is just guys named Jalen Williams, okay? Because they took them all in this draft. I just am so, like, the question that I want to ask above all, I hope I get the first question in the press conference tomorrow at this Thunder presser, is like, I just want to talk to Mark about how he's going to handle Jalen Williams and Jalen Williams in practice. Like, that's all I want to know. That's all I care about.
Do they have to do... Let's do a digital hug, because my answer is also Thunder, but I'll start with Jalen Williams. Does one of them have to change their name? Do you remember when Jason Williams from Duke came to the league, and we had Jason Williams from Sacramento, and Jason Williams from Duke said, I'm now Jay Williams. Like, no, I'm Jay Will. That's Jason Williams. Are we having like a similar thing here? How do we do this?
You have to do something.
Yeah.
I'm convinced of that, because I've tried talking about it with a lot of people over like the last like 12 hours, and it has not gone well.
No.
It's not. I don't want to have to talk about the school they played for every time that I mention their name.
It's just calling by
I don't like that.
Call them by the mascot name. I don't know. I was so happy for you guys, for Oklahoma City, because it is the island of beautiful misfit toys, where their type is the swing. And I mean that in the most positive, glowing way possible. It's the no type, but has length and can play all over the floor. It's the bucking conventional wisdom of how or why this works. It's bucking positional overlap. And Sam Presti talked about in an interview or press conference read today, where he said, we're building a team. We're not really like picking guys here, and we're going to take the ones that work. You have Chet Holmgren at 7 feet tall with a 7'5", 6" wingspan. And it's like, well, can he really do that as a five? Yeah, maybe. You have Jalen Williams, both of them. But the first one from Santa Clara, I joked with a friend last night, did Sam Presti have like a leg up on everyone, just scouring Chet and seeing like sneaky out of the corner of his eye, like a few extra Santa Clara games, because Jalen Williams made a fall over on a move and scored. So maybe he was a step ahead.
Well, and they worked out together because they have the same media, representation. Yeah.
And with Usman Jang too. Here's my thing with Usman. I was actually lower on him. I had him 20th. Personally, I would not have moved up. But I'm not mad that the Thunder gave up these picks that are all sort of like lottery-ish protected, right? Mm-hmm. This is why you accumulate the picks. So, you do this to use your resources. It was a lot of resources for a guy to have 10 spots lower. But if it's three non-lottery first-rounders to get the guy that you have 7th or 8th on your board, like, go do it. What was it, like 20 picks, 17 picks the next 3 years? If it takes three to get Usman Jang, if you believe, then go do it. And the last funny Thunder thing I'll say here is that my wife's full name is Jackie Penny, right? So before the draft, she's like, all right, last one. I have a question for you. So what do you got? She said, have you said Chet Holmgren's full name more in your life or my full name more in your life? And I thought about it. I'm like, it's probably Chet Holmgren. Like, I don't think I've said my wife's like full name or whatever. She's like, all right, enjoy it, because it ends in about 4 hours. Said, wow, that's deep. That's good.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had heard, and I had heard this from multiple people, that there were several teams bidding for Jang at 11. And so I think it's an overpay for Jang.
Yeah.
I mean, giving up three first-round picks, whether or not they're good first-rounders or not, they're all not going to be in the lottery, whatever. Maybe one of them doesn't convey. Maybe the Wizards are just bad forever, and that turns into two second-round picks. It's still probably an overpay, but eventually you're going to have to overpay to get the stuff that you want.
Right.
If Jang is the player that they wanted,
do it,
and they have that kind of evaluation on him, it's fine. I mean, they didn't give up one of their, like, Clippers picks or the Rockets picks or the Denver pick that they just acquired. So it's fine. You know, it's
fine.
It may not be like the greatest trade ever, but it's fine. You're going to have to make trades like this eventually. Like, you can't roster the amount of picks that they have. So you're going to have to trade them at some point.
Well, for my, they definitely have a type of award. I went with the Memphis Grizzlies as the draft Twitter team.
Because I was hoping you said that. I love that so much.
Like, between Jake LaRavia, David Roddy, and Vince Williams Jr., they also got Kennedy Chandler. But, like, those first three guys, I don't know if I heard, like, those are the three guys I probably heard the most about on draft Twitter over this entire pre-draft process. And so the idea that one team, and of course it's Memphis, got all three of them is just like so perfect. It makes a ton of sense. And of course they're going to get great grades from anyone on draft Twitter, because like, we love all of these guys. So I'm just very excited. And the fact that they got four players, bringing them into what we would consider like a very deep team already. You wonder if there's consolidation trades coming this summer. We already saw one a little bit with the trading of DeAnthony Melton. But yeah, I'm really interested to see how they fit all these guys into what seems like a really deep roster already.
Totally. It's such a good answer. I answered more like Vince Williams questions off cuff based on that stuff, that it had to be Memphis drafting him. It just seems like fate.
What does David Roddy do in the NBA?
I don't know.
What position does he play?
He's
How
a boat.
Does it work? I just don't. I'm just curious because he made it work at Colorado State because he could just move everybody, and he's so nimble, like he's a ballerina out there. I don't know what he does in the NBA, especially if he's going to have to guard on the perimeter. Like I would be petrified of that idea,
but
I just don't see it.
He is so big and strong, and this is like a very obscure wrestling reference, but they used to say that Bray Wyatt was like a Mack truck with a Lamborghini engine, and that's kind of what he is. Like, it doesn't look like it, but he's got like really good feet, can do some step back stuff, he shoots it, he doesn't pass the eye test, but he's productive. But I worry about it. I worry about how you go from the Mountain West to the NBA with longer, faster, quicker wings. How do you hide him out there? I had him significantly lower. If you watched or listened to the Game Theory show last night, I had to talk for about 4 minutes because Sam had pre-written all his blurbs. He's like, I don't have a Roddy blurb, had 58th. So can you talk, please? Can you keep going? I'm like, well, I hit mute because I want to hear Adam Silver do the pick, but sure.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he's all gas, no brakes sometimes, though. Like, I worry about any time that he closes out, it just feels like his momentum is just, like, carries him, like, 5 feet further than he should. Yeah. So I don't know. I have some concerns about that. I love him. I love the idea of him because I love different players and I love to watch players that are just weird. I'm looking at an Earl Boykins jersey right now. I just love guys that are different. I just love it.
Okay. Our next award, our sixth award, six of eight, is the Mixed Emotions Award. This award goes to the team whose draft night we liked, but it left us with a lot of questions. And I'm going to start us off with the Portland Trailblazers.
Ooh, because this is me too.
Portland made two decisions this week, one trading for Jeremy Grant, and then two drafting Shaedon Sharpe. In a vacuum, I love both of those moves for Portland. But these moves could not be more diametrically opposed in terms of figuring out the future of this Blazers team. Because on the one hand, Blazers bring in a vet, brings defensive versatility that they desperately needed if the plan is to rebuild a playoff team around Dame. But then on the other hand, they draft one of the youngest players in the draft who hasn't played competitive basketball at a high level in over a year. But it's a great pick if you're maximizing, is that a great pick if you're trying to maximize Dame's time in Portland? It makes me wonder, like, is that the number one priority? So I like both moves, but if the goal is to build a playoff roster around Dame that has any chance to be better than the Dame CJ Blazers, I still need to see a lot more from the current roster. And the problem I have is that they've used their two major future assets already, with the 2025 Milwaukee pick that they used to get Grant, and then the number 7 pick. Now, they still have Keon Johnson. They still have Eric Bledsoe's contract, which is only $4 million guaranteed if it's waived in the next, 4 or 5 days. I don't believe they're done by any means, but going into this draft, I felt like I would be coming out of it with a much clearer idea of the path forward for the Blazers, and I'm definitely not there yet.
Yeah. To me, it feels like they are... One, they're just riding the fence. And I honestly kind of like it for this reason. I just don't know that you can put together a contender around Dame on the fly, like they're kind of wanting to. And so to me, if you've got Shaedon Sharpe on your team and you ride this out and you get to maybe next offseason and they were like the 7th seed or whatever, they're out in round one. You can maybe Dame looks at the situation like, okay, maybe we can't really do what I want to do here, and then you trade Dame. If you do that, you are so glad you took Shaedon Sharpe.
Yeah.
Unless he's not good. Like, I don't know. I really have no idea about what he's gonna be.
It's not just you. We all don't know. He hasn't played
right.
2 years.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would say I like it because if he works out, man, that's great. And if they can somehow cobble together a team that's maybe like the 4 or 5 seed instead, and then you develop them along, great. But it also allows you to pivot a little bit faster. Because if they either traded that pick for a player that's ready now, or maybe you took somebody that you thought could play now, maybe you don't have as high of a ceiling with that group. But then if you're starting over with whatever you get in a Dame trade, Anfernee Simons and Shaedon Sharpe, I think if you're a Blazers fan, you can feel a lot better about that rebuild than if you did something otherwise. So to me, it's just kind of a play in that direction where, and I mean, Mike Schmidt's had a great inside with this situation and probably knew him better than a lot of people. And so you have to trust that. And then I just like the play for the future for them because I just have a hard time seeing a Damian Lillard-led team like doing anything besides like maybe winning a round in the Western Conference playoffs. But if you look at the West, it's going to be really hard to even do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if they had gotten like OG, then like you can kind of talk yourself into it. But I think like the dissonance I'm having is that leading up to the draft, that pick was talked about more than any other pick as like, this is most definitely getting traded. And so I think I agree with you, Andrew. Like, I love the future thinking that went into this pick. Like, I really like that they're not just going all in for these next 2 years, or at least that's the way it feels right now. But I'm hoping for Blazers fans who want the Dame thing to go on a little bit longer that there's something else coming this summer.
Yeah.
It's mixed emotions. It's a perfect way to put it, because you make the Grant trade, like, all right, kind of we're making the move to win, I guess. And then it's like, we're going to take the biggest shot in the dark of all time here. And then do you win around the playoffs and then kind of mess up your lottery position a year from now if you're trying to get even younger and get a top 3 to 5 pick? So it's weird. It's funky.
So we all went with Portland there. Is that correct? Or did you have someone else?
No, I actually have a different one. A little bit of a wild card here. I'm with the Sacramento Kings.
Okay.
I love Keegan Murray. I do. I can't stress that enough. I've driven this bus, train, whatever automobile vehicle you want to talk about this season. He is in the second tier for me. I had Chet, Jabari, the next tier of Paolo, Keegan Murray, and Jaden Ivey kind of interchangeably. So I love Keegan's prospect. I do. It just gets dicey when he's going to be weighed against Jaden Ivey's success. And Jaden Ivey is more, I'd say, positioned to be successful from the jump with Cade Cunningham. I don't know how the defense works with Keegan Murray and Sabonis up front. I think he will also be very productive. If this is it's more like a commentary about the pick that didn't happen to the one that did. This isn't like an, oh my gosh, I can't believe they went here, not there. It would be hard for me to pass on Jaden Ivey. And if he ends up being what some of the people project him to be, me included, we'll look back and say, ooh, they should have just taken Ivey, put him with De'Aaron Fox, and gone from there.
Yeah. Just expand the graphic, ESPN, that you've been putting out that has the Marvin Bagley, Luka Doncic, Thomas Robinson, Damian Lillard, Jimmer Fredette, Klay Thompson. I mean, that's just tack it on there, baby.
But I don't think he's one of those guys, and that's the difference here. He's going to be very, very good. There's people who caught up, and he's a little bit older. He's 21. Mm-hmm. He's 22 as a rookie. He just plowed over people in non-conference play. It's not true. Shot 40% from three. 99th percentile in scoring from post-ups, can create a little bit out of mid-range, can play when the game's really fast, is able to be like this dribble handoff guy, pick-and-pop guy, pick-and-roll guy on offense. So he does have real versatility. He's going to be successful. I would bet on Jaden Ivey's success a little bit more than his.
Yeah, this may be dumb, but like the thing I can't get out of my head, like I wish I hadn't seen it, was the Jonathan Givony report from a week ago about the Kings, and specifically saying that Vivek wanted Keegan Murray. Like, I wish I had just never seen that sentence, because I want to know that, like, this is Monty McNair's choice. I don't care what Vivek wants. Just knowing that Vivek got his guy does not make me feel good.
It's better than the equation that they pumped in for Nick Stauskas to spit him out. At least he spit out Keegan Murray. Like, that graphic, Keegan Murray will not be on that graphic, because it'll be like, all right, whatever. He averages 18 a game. Jaden Ivey's 22. Sure, Ivey's the guy, but that's not crazy. What's the next year that the Kings did something crazy?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Our seventh award is the Miffed and Peeved Award. This award goes to the fan base that is most frustrated after draft night. Matt, why don't you start us off with this one?
I have one tongue-in-cheek one first, and I'm going to say the Denver Nuggets, because now you have Nikola Jokic and Nikola Jovic. It's giving the Jalen Williams squared a run for their money, and like the name game thing. Like, is it you? Is it me? Like, my answer is the New York Knicks, though. And I'm still, it's now 1:30 here. I'm still trying to figure out who and what went where, like what happened. I couldn't do it in real time.
Right.
I don't have more clarity now. The press release they sent out had 3 asterisks on it. It was like 1 star, 2, then 3. It wasn't like the postscript. It was like postscript. So I don't know. But here's the deal. This was more about moving some salary space to clear room in free agency, which I get it. I do. I was just rooting as a fan for the Bronx cheers from the home crowd with a pick or 3 picks going wrong. I have enough friends that are Knicks fans that convinced themselves they would move into like the top 3 or 4 I was like, you don't have the assets to do that. Like, how is that happening? But you talk yourself into it, the draft night, end up with like kind of nothing. Didn't happen. It's just sort of a morning of frustration in New York a little bit.
Yeah. It's just so weird. It was so difficult to follow last night what was happening. Because when it seemed like they were getting Jalen Duren, you were like, oh, cool.
Yeah, Mitchell Robinson's going to beat it or whatever. Great, Jalen Duren fits.
Yeah, yeah, great. I've never been a Mitchell Robinson guy anyway. So I was like, that seems like a really smart move. You let him go somewhere else, let somebody else pay him, and then you bring in Jalen Duren on a rookie scale deal. Like, that's great. And then they take 13 and Kemba and get this 2025 pick that everybody was like, man, that's all you got for Jeremy Grant. But then you take that and turn, like, you basically turn Jeremy Grant into Jalen Duren. It's like, oh man, like, that's really smart. The Knicks did what? And they got who? It's all about probably the cap space for them, yeah, more than anything else. And then you get these protected picks that are fine. But, and you know, maybe they use those to acquire something else or whatever. This feels like there's a lot of unfinished business here with the Knicks. Like, I would be surprised if they're like, man, can't wait for this 2023 Washington pick to convey in a few years. You know, I don't, to me, it seems like they're trying to do something else, would be my guess.
Yeah. And I thought Tom Ziller had a really good point about the Knicks night on his Good Morning It's Basketball Substack. He said, where the confusion and consternation comes in is really in the last trade. You're telling me that the 11th pick in this very draft is so valuable that it's worth three future firsts, but then the number 13 pick is only worth $9 million in cap space and a future low protected first, and you spent four future seconds and one of your 2023 firsts to get it. And hey, maybe this goes to what you were saying, Andrew, about you heard that multiple teams were trying to get up to get Usman Jang at number 11. Mm-hmm. And so maybe there was that big of a value gap from 11 to 13, but it was just such a confusing series of events.
I had heard that the value did drop after Jang. Like, the value of, like, the perceived value of the picks dropped after that. I heard that from multiple people yesterday. And so it makes some sense there, but it does feel weird. The whole night for the Knicks feels weird because they were preparing themselves, oh, we're going to get this player, that player.
A Griffin and a shooter and a floor spacer. Alex read that. I still have no idea what happened. Like, I tried. I like tried to process. It's like, it's your reading on the SATs. Like, I think I got that, but I don't know. I guess the answer is C.
Yeah.
What about you, Andrew? Did you have a different team for the Miffed and Peeved Award?
Yeah, I have the Indiana Pacers. Not that they should be upset that they have Ben Mather on their team now, because I really like that pick. It's just that you just peer over the fence and you see Jaden Ivey just right there. And it's just like, oh man, like, could we have found out a way to make this happen? Probably not, because I do think the Pistons would have probably just taken Keegan Murray, you know, if that happened. And like, Jaden Ivey goes there. I don't know. I don't know if they could have made a deal to get this done. However, it's just frustrating for like the guy that makes sense for your team the most to go just one pick ahead of you.
Yeah, well,
so I think that you can be a little bit miffed about that, because you could see like the future, similar to the fire and ice that we were talking about with the Pistons. It would be the same thing with Tyrese Haliburton in Indiana. I think Mathurin's going to fit great there. I think that he can be a really, really good player. However, you know, you hate to be on the outside of what feels like a tier drop off and see that on the other side, especially when your team, I mean, the Pacers are never bad. They're never in this position. They haven't been in this position where they're picking inside the top 10. And it probably stings a little bit for your team to suffer as much as you did last year and then end up just on the other side of this tier.
Yeah. They tried to get to four. The price was really heavy. It threw me for a loop because I thought the price was heavy because Sacramento coveted Jaden Ivey. They're like, well, you want Ivey, it's going to be this. And for them to still take Keegan Murray, you think like if they had swapped, they could have still got him at five or six. So who knows?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually That's went strange. With the Kings for my Miffed and Peeved Award. But like we were just talking about, it's not really about Keegan Murray. Like, I think if you're a Kings fan, you can feel good about that pick. It's more that once they jumped up in the lottery and jumped up to number four, the entire conversation was about how they were going to use the immense value of this fourth pick to parlay that into multiple role players that they definitely need on this team to bolster this roster and make it a playoff team. Because after this draft, like, what is the plan now? Like, should Kings fans feel any more hopeful about the chance to end the playoff streak after that draft? There's a Kings fan on Twitter that I really like, at TimMaxwell22, who put it really well. He said, "The Kings walking into the offseason with a terrible roster, no desirable vets that they can afford to part with, no extra first-round picks outside of their own, no young talent they can spare, and only the MLE to spend, which most other teams also have." And it's hard for me to, like, push too strongly back against that. Because now that that fourth pick has been used, what is the realistic path to them significantly upgrading this roster? Like, we talk about Harrison Barnes being a trade candidate, but, like, he's one of the few rotation NBA players on that team. Like, they kind of need guys bodies like Harrison Barnes. Yeah.
Yeah, he's, like, their second best player last year.
The rotation for what
yeah,
he
so, like,
is
trading
there.
Him away feels like you're going to be taking a step back. And so, for Kings fans who were probably very excited about moving up in the draft, I think it's understandable to feel a little miffed and peeved today, even if you liked the Keegan pick.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. It just felt Kings, you know?
It did.
You know,
which it just sucks.
Those situations just have a feeling. I mean, like, I'm an Oklahoma State graduate, Oklahoma State fan. The feeling of losing the most important game of your season, it just feels like being an Oklahoma State fan. You know, it's just like the most familiar feeling ever. And, like, this pick just had to have felt so Kings.
And even, like, trading that second round pick, like, in the early second, like, it just felt like, there's really no one.
Yeah.
There's really no one
yeah.
we can bring in.
Well, and when it was Hardy, who people were like, a lot of people had first round
right.
grades on
yeah.
this guy. Like, oh, he finally drops into our lap. No, we're going to give him to the Mavs.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, come on.
So I would totally get it if Kings fans are a little miffed today. Our final award, the granddaddy of them all, Andrew, it is the Slam and Jam Best Draft Award. This award goes to the team that we think had the best overall draft. Andrew, why don't you start us off?
I've been talking about Detroit basketball this whole time. I think for where they were picking and the assets that they had, I think that they had the best draft. You know, getting Jaden Ivey at 5 is tremendous value. I think that getting a Gabriele Prochita in the second round is great. And then making the trade to get Jalen Duren, I thought that was a great way to use cap space, to use the tools that you have in front of you. You know, Detroit's not like a free agent destination, and so you have to be creative. And I thought they were. And so I really, really liked what they did with the value that was on the board, because I think that you can leave draft lottery night and feel really disappointed after the horrible season they had. You kind of felt like maybe you can stack, like, tremendous talent with Cade. And just by the Kings being above them, they were able to do it. You know, it really, to me, it was, there's a lot of luck. They had bad luck, but then they had good luck after the lottery to get to where they were.
And they're really high on Jalen Duren, too. He was a guy they had firmly in their top 7 or 8 or so. So to get him in via trade and really probably get two guys that are in the top 6 or 7 of their board, it's a great night.
Yep.
Matt, what about you? Who's your best draft?
So I initially was going to say Detroit. They've got enough love here. I'm going to go with the San Antonio Spurs. And,
ooh, yeah.
And here's why. They ended up with 3 guys in my personal top 18 on my board, and with their first 3 picks, that their last pick was at 25 in the first round. And Jeremy Sochan, you can do the Pearl Jam if you need to one last time, because he's not going to be a Thunder.
Jeremy Sochan. I'm so sad I didn't get to sing it for the Thunder. I am so sad. That was the saddest moment for me last night whenever Sochan was taken at 9.
I would have needed the introductory press conference when you do that, and he's like, yeah, like, what's up? So you have him. You have Malachi Branham at 20. You have Blake Wesley at 25. Malachi Branham yeah. and Jeremy Sochan turned 19 in May. Blake Wesley turned 19 in March. High-level guys that I really like that are still really young. They also snagged Dom Barlow from Overtime Elite as an undrafted free agent that I really like. I had 46 on my board. So you have these March babies, a May baby, that are only 3 months older than one of my babies from last year, Josh Primo. That's a young core. Wow. It feels different than what the Spurs have done traditionally. I like that they've leaned into this youth movement. And it's sort of like this relegation model, next man up, where, all right, Primo's called up to the show, and now these guys can go down to Austin, develop, take a year, and we'll just do this all over again.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, and for my choice, the Slam and Jam Best Draft Award, Andrew, similar to Matt, I knew you were going to go with the Pistons, so I did not choose the Pistons. Obviously, they had a great draft. Now, this might be a big brain choice, okay? I'm warning you. It might be a galaxy brain choice.
Oh, no.
It's going to be someone who didn't have a pick. Hold on.
But I think you have to judge teams based on what assets they came into the draft with and what assets they left with. And is there a team that did a better job than the Philadelphia 76ers? They came into this draft with very few assets. Okay. All they had was this 23rd pick at the end of a first round of a draft that everyone said, like, picks around this range aren't that valuable. D'Anthony Melton can be a secondary creator. He can be a perimeter defender for them. He's a good three-point shooter. He's super efficient while not needing the ball at all, and you're putting him with two ball-heavy stars like James Harden and Joel Embiid. More importantly, he's only 24. All the other guys we've heard about, it's the Houston Redux. It's, you know, P.J. Tucker, Eric Gordon.
Yeah.
And those, if they do make deals for those guys, it's fine. Like, you need vets like that. But I like the idea of getting someone who's not just going to help you next year, but also for the future is still going to be relevant for the Sixers. So considering that they had like really limited options coming in this draft, coming away with D'Anthony Melton, I think is a huge win for the Sixers.
Wow, you are just playing into the slop of Trill Bro Dude right now.
This and is all Keith this Parrish. Is. And Keith Parrish.
This is such-
Oh, poor Keith. Poor Keith. I was really sad for Keith when I saw that trade go through. I don't like that for them.
Yeah. This is such an NBA podcast. When we went there for like the winner of the draft, of like they got a kind of weird rotational guy, right?
It's pretty good. I'm like, the winner of the NBA draft is someone who acquired D'Anthony Melton.
Yeah, that sounds right to me.
It's not the Magic who got an instant contributor. Yeah.
Nope.
It's not.
Nope. Next.
It's not Portland.
Hey, I will say this. About the Orlando Magic. They played this so well.
Ridiculous.
I loved what they did. Because they didn't maybe get what they wanted. I think that they ultimately probably wanted someone to take the bait on Jabari Smith at one. As I think that was the play the whole time. Is like, let's just put out there that we're taking him and that's our favorite guy and see if we can get the Thunder or the Rockets to take the bait. And nobody did. But nobody knew this is what was going to happen up until, I mean, the moment that I had any inkling that this was going to happen is when those sports books turned at like midnight or 1 a.m. You know, I wake up, my dog is barking, I go let her out, and I look at my phone, and it's like, Paolo Banchero number one? Like, what?
Draft season. I had the same thing. It was like 12 in the morning to like 6. I wake up. My phone's on fire. He's all these notifications. Paolo's going number one. And then the odds kind of reshifted around lunchtime. Woj doubled down and said the order is going to be Jabari, Chet, Paolo. It's like, well, he's not wrong. The books adjust.
Right.
And then it gets to be draft time. It adjusts again. And then around 7:40, 7:45, you kind of get the call. Like, no, it's going Paolo. It's like, how good is Vegas? Who do they know? How is the algorithm always right?
I know.
Whether it's spreads, whether it's picked, it's unreal. I tip my hat, my cap, whatever I got on my big head here, to the Magic, to Paolo's team. This was kept under wraps to everybody, even the closest insiders, with the exception of the Vegas insiders setting these lines.
Right.
And if this is their guy, then hey, congrats to them.
Yeah, and I love that they took the guy that I think has like the highest creation ability outcome. I just think that that's the kind of player that if you want to change your franchise, that's the kind of player you need. Because I'm not sure that they have that guy on their team now. Because if you take Jabari Smith, you're kind of betting that you already have that guy.
That's a good point.
And I don't think they do. And so to take him, he's the hub of the offense. Like, he will be the Magic. For the next decade, when we think about the Magic, we're going to think about Paolo Banchero first. And I like that. Because I'm not sure that if Jabari was the guy, he may not be the first guy you think of when you think of the Magic. He's probably not going to be the first guy you think of when you think of the Rockets. I still think that's going to be Jalen Green. Whereas if he did go to the Rockets, there's a chance that you think about Paolo first. So I like that they made that pick for them. It goes back all the way to right after the draft lottery, you came on our show. And Alex, I think one of the first questions you asked was,
why,
like,
not?
Why is it not Paolo Banchero?
Yeah.
And I think it was a great question. And ultimately, you were right.
Did you know something? Are you Vegas? Okay. Are you the guy?
Were you cooking the books,
what are we doing
Al?
Here? What about Paolo,
huh? You guys have talked me into it. I am taking back my award from the Philadelphia 76ers. they're no longer best draft. I'm giving it to the Orlando Magic because you know what? You're right. When you factor in the smoke screen, because I saw people saying, like, Why even do a smoke screen as a number one pick? You can take whoever you want. But, like, what a flex on the league. Like, if we're going to judge a front office in terms – like, it's very hard to judge a front office by competency other than by, like, who they pick and the moves they make. This is one way to do it. The fact that this front office was able to keep this under wraps for so long – like, I have never seen a smoke screen like that. And how can that be anything other than indicative of a very competent front office that knows what they're doing? So I think it was, like, wildly impressive. So, Slam and Jam Best Draft Award, Orlando Magic.
Magic. Yeah, if you are a Magic fan, you have to be feeling so good about your front office this morning.
Yeah, for sure.
Because of the moves, because of the way they did this.
I mean,
if they had telegraphed what they want to do the whole time, I think that's kind of a red flag of like, uh-oh.
Well,
like, there's leaks.
Kind of did,
whatever.
Though, right? Wasn't it like a half telegraph? Because as soon as the lottery came out, there was reports like Jabari Smith's the guy. This is who it's supposed to be. A week later.
Smoke screen, bro. That was a smoke screen, right?
3 months later. But it all, like, was there. And, yes, maybe it was, like, the first line of smoke they threw out there. They tricked literally everyone. Or 99% of the people that follow this stuff.
Well, it looked like, including Paolo. Like, his reaction after being selected, he looked stunned. And obviously, like, if you watched any of the videos of Houston fans reacting, we were talking about, like, communicating your picks to everyone. They did this last year with Jalen Green. They definitely did it this year with Paolo. Like, Jabari didn't even go to Houston to work out. And just to see those fans, I mean, everyone believed it. So I just, it was wildly impressive.
Yeah, it was awesome. This ends our second edition of the NBA Draft Awards. Matt Penny, thanks so much for coming on the show. We can follow you on Twitter. Give me your Twitter handle again. I want to make sure that I have it exactly right.
Exactly. Matt_Penny. Thanks for having me as always. This is always so much fun to come on here. So congrats for your show going through the draft process. You guys have been the best. Bring on so many different guests on so many different platforms. So thanks for having me as one of those here.
Yeah, this was a blast. Go listen to the Game Theory podcast as well as a part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Thanks so much for listening to the Saturday Slam and Jam. We will be back next week talking free agency. We've got Summer League coming up. We will be at Summer League doing live shows on the concourse. So if you are going to be in Vegas, look out for stuff on Twitter. We will be promoting it. I know The Athletic will be promoting it. We'll be doing some live shows for you guys there. So be sure to come and hang out with us on the concourse in Vegas at the Thomas & Mack. Hope you guys have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you guys again next week.